This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. Hey there, welcome back to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. I'm the elder bald one. I'm Mark Stucheski. I live in Houston, Texas. I'm also the host of the Mark Stucheski Podcast. This other fine looking gentleman who looks like the Grizzly Adams, if you remember that show, he's younger than me, but he hasn't shaved the goatee and the beard yet, so he's not in denial. I shaved my entire head and face. Who might you be, my cousin?
I am the younger bald nerd, Dan Bornt, and I live in Rochester, New York, which is where Mark actually hails from, but he bailed early to escape the winter.
Yeah, actually, if you know anything about Rochester, I'm from a suburb called North Chalai. Now, I've met some people over the course of my 1,100 plus interviews, or 1,100 plus episodes. I forgot the word of my other show. And some people actually know. See, if they've heard of New York State, then I go, okay, have you heard of Buffalo and Syracuse? Yeah. Okay. In between there, there's a city called Rochester. Yeah, I heard of it. Have you heard of North Chalai? And every once in a while, someone will at least blow my mind to go, yeah, I've heard of North Chalai. Matter of fact, I used to live on this street and this. I'm like, wow, it's rare. But yeah, because you live actually in the city of Rochester, right?
Yep. I live right on the outskirts of the city, just south of Greece, the Greece border.
Wow. Now, I will tell you, know, I haven't seen Danny in person since 2012, but I think a walkway from your house is a gorgeous running path. And someday I'm going to get up there, not during the winter when it's hot down here in Houston. I'll come up there because I want to run along the canal. That looks so awesome to run when you're not like running in the sun like we run down here in Houston.
Yeah. My housemate, Mike, has been getting into running lately. And he loves to run that path, runs right along the Genesee River. You could take it south through the city, or you could take it north right up to the lake. So it's very, very nice.
Yeah, Rochester hasn't done a lot of things well, but that one they did really well because you can literally, I mean, I don't think you could run the whole path. You could probably bike it, but I don't think running, unless you're a marathoner, it's a long, long, long path, but it's gorgeous. And I've seen some of the places it goes through. So someday I'm going to come up there again, not during the winter, which means just to be safe, May, June, July, and August, and maybe the early part of September. That's it, Danny. You won't see me outside those months up in Rochester. I know what happens.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I remember, was it last winter 21-22, where you got quite the workout? You had to keep shoveling your driveway. See, I don't have that problem in Houston. If it snows down here, they shut the city down.
That's true. That's true. We did get it. We did get a snowblower, though, this year.
Wow.
It was a donation from Mike's brother. Mike's brother got an upgrade to his snowblower and kindly donated his old snowblower, which actually works really well. Nice. So it will save our backs this coming winter, or any coming winter, as
yeah,
it were.
Exactly.
If we get
exactly.
A lot. The shoveling snow isn't really the problem so much in the driveway. It's really the stuff at the end of the driveway, because the plows come through and dump all the really heavy wet stuff at the end of the driveway. So shoveling snow a little bit is a good workout, but shoveling that stuff at the end of the driveway will give you a heart attack.
Yeah. Well, this is not an episode or a show about weather or Houston or Rochester. This is about nerdy stuff, and we're going to get really nerdy today. Now, I know in the first 4 minutes of this episode, I did a lot of talking. That's because Danny's going to do a lot of talking for a while now, because the subject of today, and you could tell Danny came up with this one, open source versus proprietary. I never would have chose this subject. So Danny's just going to teach us. And then when I have questions, because I'm like, duh, don't understand, then I pipe in. But Danny, take away your episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark.
I'm going to mute my mic in case I fall asleep. No, just kidding.
Oh, no. I'll try to make it somewhat entertaining. The reason I picked this topic is actually because I think there's a lot of people out there that don't understand the concept of different kinds of software. So what I wanted to do first is just run through a definition of some of the main types of software. Proprietary software is basically any software where the source code of that software. So if you think about it in terms of software, you get a program, whether it's an app off of an app store or something that you buy to download to your personal computer, something you install on your Mac, whatever, you're getting a program that runs. It's an executable that runs and it does what it needs to do. There's obviously source code behind that that developers use to build that program. And then that program gets, that source code gets compiled into that program that you then run. That's the oversimplified way of how that works.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. I do have a question here. So when you say proprietary, you're talking about Apple's iOS and Mac OS. You're talking about Windows. You're talking about like Telegram, the WhatsApp, all that code they make these apps for. That's what you're talking about.
Yep. So the actual source code itself is proprietary. So what they build, those programs that they, that you get, is proprietary. And what proprietary means is that you as an end user don't get to ever touch it.
So if you're not working for the company, you don't get to see the code.
Correct. Only those people that work for the company, or in the case of somebody who releases it on their own, but keeps it proprietary. Like there's an example of some of those pieces of software where it's an individual person that develops it and releases it. They keep ownership of that code. They don't let anybody else see it. Only they use it. And usually what you do is you get a license. In some cases, you can get a license to the software to let you use it. In some cases, you can get the application itself for free to use it. So that's where I get into some of the other ones. So then there's this class of software. So proprietary is all source code based. Open source, again, we're talking source code based, but I'll get to that whole definition in a minute. Freeware is where, in general, the source code is still proprietary, but you get the software for free. So an example of a Windows program that would be like that would be Telegram's a good example, right? The source code for Telegram is proprietary, but they don't charge you to actually download the program and use the program. You can get the program for free. So anytime you can get a program for free, but you don't have access to the source code, it's generally called freeware. Adware, which we deal with a lot now in terms of apps on mobile app stores, is where the software itself that you get for free, but as you're going through the software, it might jump in every 10 minutes, 20 minutes. You open it every third time, whatever, and you'll see an ad being played inside the software. Sometimes they're in the banner. With the mobile, but they've gone crazy with the mobile apps. You could probably tell, like you could be playing a mobile app and right in the middle of reading something, a just big old ad pops up in the middle of what you're doing, right? That's what they call adware. Again, the source code is proprietary. You don't really get to see how that code is put together, and they just bombard you with ads. And generally what they'll do is they'll let you pay to remove the ads, right? We see that with a lot of these things on the app stores and whatnot, where it's either a subscription service or a one-time charge. It used to be back in the day, it was all just a one-time charge or maybe a yearly fee. Now it's what they call a subscription. You know, they got
everyone's going to the subscription model now. And as a matter of fact, one of the apps that both you and I like is Fantastical. And I was paying like $35, $40 a month. And I'm like, you know, it's not the money, but it's like, would the iOS calendar and the Apple calendar suit my needs? And I answered yes. So I discontinued my subscription because it used to be a one-time fee. And like everybody else, because it's a continuity program, you get a payment every month or every year. And I'm like, I understand the benefits of it because I have a membership program, which is essentially the same thing. It's a subscription model, but it's like, okay, if I pay a subscription, are the features really there? So I encourage anyone, when you go buy any kind of app or software, ask yourself, is this really worth it? So prime example, you know me, I'm an Apple guy, Danny. I won't pay for Microsoft Office every month because I get Apple iWork, which is pretty good in terms of spreadsheets and Word documents. And they got Keynote, which is the PowerPoint, and it comes with Macs. So why would I want to pay a subscription service when the free, well, it's not free, it comes with the Mac, it's already included. So that's sort of what we're talking about here.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You have to be very careful too nowadays, because they've really gone, like I said before, they've really gone nuts with some of the way that they run these subscription models. Some of them are yearly fees. Some of them are monthly fees.
Yeah.
But you got to be very careful, especially with a lot of the mobile apps. Even Adobe, like the whole Adobe suite of products, they jumped on the bandwagon because they saw how much everybody else is making a killing on subscription fees. They've moved to a subscription model. So now you download the program, but in order to use it after that initial buy-in period, I think I tried it and it's like a 7-day or 14-day trial period. They kneecap you on what you can do inside that program unless you sign up for their subscription service, which is pretty hefty.
Yeah. And there used to be a time you could buy just Microsoft Outlook or just Excel or just Word. Now it's all bundled. So if you want any Microsoft products, pony up, and it's not $5 a month. So if you think $35 a year for Fantastical is a lot of money, go price Microsoft Office yearly. That's or monthly. They charge you monthly. It's expensive.
Yeah, Office 365 is not cheap. The only people who get it cheap are students. You, as a student, I think they're still doing the $10 a month, but still think about that. For a student, that's $120 a year. I mean, that's for a student, that might not necessarily be all that cheap. So,
and though I'm not a fan of Google, Google Docs, Google Sheets, you know, that's free. I mean, yeah, you get the tracking and all this stuff, but if it's got the functionality you want, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs who are millionaires who use Google Docs. So you don't have Microsoft Office is not the only option out there, is what we're trying to say. So as Danny said, go out and look at your options. Don't just assume you have to buy Office or some other program.
At the end of this, I'm gonna give a website that will then go into our WhatsApp group, which I will plug at the end of the show, like we always do.
Well, you just plugged it right now, which is pretty cool.
Well, I could plug it. I did plug the group, but I'll give you the actual group at the end of the show. But what this will let you do is it's a curated list of all open source, and most of the open source alternatives are also free. And what you could do is you could plug in something like Word or Excel or Keynote or Adobe, and it will give you a list of open source alternatives that you can then get. So it's a very good source. I've used it many times over the years.
Okay.
So we talked about adware. Nagware is another one. Nagware is basically, they call it, I don't know how much, it's probably not around as much, but it was a thing back in the 90s and the early 2000s. And basically what it is you download it, and the reason they call it Nagware is you would download it, and they would let you use it full-featured for as long as you want, but either every time you opened it, or every third time you opened it, it would literally give you a nag screen that wouldn't go away for some predetermined amount of time. Go out and buy the license for this software just to support the developer. Or sometimes it would pop up in the middle of when you were doing something inside the software. So they literally termed it Nagware.
Wow.
Because it nagged you over and over and over again. So, again, not so prevalent, I don't think, anymore with the whole subscription model thing, but it was a thing, so I figured I'd mention it.
Now, before we go on to the open source, which I know is next because I can see the notes here, one thing I find what I think is refreshing is the people that give you unfettered access for a trial, whether it's 3 days, 7 days, 10 days. Because remember back in the day, Danny, that you would say, oh, a trial, and they'd give you like 30%. Well, how am I supposed to make an educated decision if I don't have access to all the features? So a lot of people now, matter of fact, I just signed on with a new company called ClipScribe. And what they do is they help you caption your videos for social media. And they gave complete access for 7 days. So I got to try everything out. The problem is if you don't give people full access during the trial, well, they may choose not to buy that software or the app because they haven't seen all the features. So I see a trend not only going to subscription models, but also the other way where they're giving you total access for that trial period.
For years before I started really digging into open source stuff, if I was looking for a piece of software, one of the criterias, and again, this is probably pretty harsh, one of the criterias I had is that if I was going to be asked to pay money for a piece of software, and they were going to give me a trial period to use it, they had to make it full featured or I wasn't even going to try it.
It's a good rule.
Only because, like you just said, if I can't try all the features and I don't know all the features that are included, why am I going to pay for the product? How do I know it's going to do everything I need it to do? So excellent point. The granddaddy for me anyway on this whole list is the open source stuff. And basically, open source is where the source code is open and available for the user, and not necessarily the user, but anybody who wants to look at the source code to get to and look at. If you think about terms like GitHub, right? A lot of people talk about GitHub.
Yep.
GitHub is a place where you store source code. Now, they've gotten into a lot of other interesting things now where you can actually host websites off of GitHub. But in general, it started as a place to do version control for source code. And originally, in order to get the free version of GitHub, you had to have all of your repositories for the free version of GitHub were open repositories. In other words, it was source code that you put out there that you couldn't lock to just you being able to use it. So it was very much, if you were using GitHub for free, you were automatically promoting the open source model because your source code was open by default because you could not lock any of your, what they call repos, which is basically the storehouse of your source code. There's a bunch of different reasons why open source is good, and I'm going to get to some of the pros and cons in a minute. I've got a table from a website that I found that basically hits all of the good bits, pros and cons of each. But the overriding factor with open source is generally it's always free. Not always, but generally it's free. There are some developers who, if you pay the developer, he will give you the source code to use. 90% of open source, 99% of open source stuff is free. So it's free to get. It's free to use. The source code is then free for you to look at. It's free to you to change. So if you're a developer listening to this podcast, you'll understand that concept. Taking source code and being able to tweak it, add features, change features. If you find a bug in the software, you can fix it yourself. In general, you have the ability under certain licensing agreements. And again, I don't want to get too much into the licensing aspect of this because that's a whole other conversation. But in general, there's licensing agreements that go along with all kinds of software. And the big ones that go along with open source are either what they call the MIT license, which basically gives unrestricted access to the source code for you to do whatever you want. The BSD license, which basically does the same thing, and the GPL license, which basically says you can use the source code, redistribute it, and in all these cases, you can change it, redistribute it, as long as you don't keep the original name of the project. You can redistribute it under another name. They call that forking, and even sell that redistribution for money on your own accord to make money off of the product if you want to. The difference with the GPL is any changes you make to the source code, you have to give back to the original developer if they want, so that they have the option to include that in their software as well. With the other two licenses, MIT and BSD, you don't have to, I'm pretty sure you don't have to give anything back. This gets into something that would be interest to you and any Mac user. Mac actually takes its starting point for its kernel. I think we talked about this in the operating system, that Mac uses the BSD kernel as its starting point. And the reason it uses the BSD kernel is because the BSD kernel is open source and it's under the BSD license, which means Apple can take that kernel, change it however it wants to. Once it's changed, it doesn't have to give those changes back to the BSD team to incorporate anything. They can repackage it like they do into Darwin, which is the starting point of the Mac OS kernel, and then use it and sell it, and now it's become proprietary. But it starts off as an open source piece of software. But then they change it and add their proprietary bits to it, and now it becomes proprietary. But that's why they chose that, because they can get away with doing that. Not, I shouldn't say get away with, it is legal for them to take that software, change it, and use it for their own purposes, but not give anything back to the original developers. That's all baked into the BSD license. It's why they didn't go with the Linux kernel, which is what I use, because that's under the GPL license, which means any changes you make to the Linux kernel, you have to give back to the actual Linux kernel developers so that they can incorporate those changes into the Linux kernel if they so choose to. And of course, okay. Mac trying to make money off of their products and try to come, you know, trying to keep all their stuff in their own little box so that they keep everything self-contained. Didn't want to go down that road because you can get into a lot of legal problems with that. So mm-hmm. that's where that all comes from. So some quick examples of some proprietary software. Mark, you already mentioned a lot of these. Any of the Apple stuff. So it's operating systems. It's the Mac OS. It's the iOS, iPad OS, Watch OS. Any of the Apple pieces of software that you'd use, like Notes, Pages, Numbers, Final Cut Pro, all that kind of stuff. On the Microsoft side, we already mentioned Microsoft Office, Office 365, and I already talked about the Adobe stuff, the Photoshop, Illustrator, Creator, all that stuff. That's all proprietary stuff. On the open source side of things, the main office suites that they have on the open source side of the house are LibreOffice and OpenOffice, which are both extremely compatible with Microsoft Office. Matter of fact, I do a lot of my home stuff in LibreOffice spreadsheets, and I can open up, and I have yet to find, unless I'm doing some really weird advanced macros, I have yet to find something that breaks when I open it in Excel. Because I have Excel through work because, you know, most corporations are tied to Microsoft like their life depends on it.
Yeah.
And so, but I can open my OpenOffice spreadsheets in my Excel program on my work laptop without having any issues. Same thing with the Word document. So they have a version of Word, whatnot. One thing that a lot of people don't know is that WordPress in and of itself, the WordPress software is open source. You can literally grab the WordPress software and run it on your own server. You don't have to go through WordPress.com. If you go to WordPress.org, it gives you the ability to go through and download it and host all that yourself. So you can see all the back end of WordPress. One of the things that's become big in movies these days and in the movie industry is a lot of these shops are moving away from things like the Adobe stuff because it gets so expensive. Not that movies can't do things with this, but a lot of that movie-specific software has become so expensive, and the open source alternatives have become so good that they're moving away from using those. And one of the big ones that they're using now is there's a couple of them. One of them's called Blender. That's an open source. That's like the big open source one is a program called Blender that they use for 3D modeling. So that's where you can get in. You can use that for doing a lot of CGI stuff. So that's kind of like some examples. Any questions? You good so far, Mark?
No, you didn't put me asleep, and I'm impressed. Right. I will tell you. Well, I got a question for you then, because I used to be on WordPress. Now my whole website is hosted on Kajabi, so I'm actually throwing you a curveball here. Do you know if Kajabi is a proprietary software? I mean, I should have asked you ahead of time. It just literally popped into my head.
I believe they use pieces of open source.
Okay.
So this is where we get into some of these companies like a Kajabi, where they're doing multiple things and they have multiple parts.
Yeah. So let me before you explain what Kajabi is, it's all in one. So you can host your website and your blog on there, your email marketing. Both this podcast and the Mark Stuchesky podcast are hosted on Kajabi podcast. They do memberships. They do courses. So instead of having you go to one site, this is where my course is, another site, this is where my membership is, another site, this is where my blog is. Their whole thing is everything under one roof. So they got all these different parts, and they just, over the years, they've grown and just kept adding these pieces onto them.
Yep. I will, it'd be interesting to take a look. I have a feeling that some of their back-end infrastructure is probably running open source stuff, but the way they've packaged it all together into the nice front end, I believe that's probably proprietary. You know, they've probably got a team of developers that put all that together so that they can, you know, charge for the service and make it all nice and succinct.
Yeah.
For the
one thing I like about, I will say, I love about Kajabi is because the problem with WordPress is it was open source, and then you have all these plugins. Okay. Well, if a plugin starts misbehaving, it could affect your whole website. With Kajabi, they make sure everything works. So you can't put it, there's no plugins. So if they want a feature like feature A, the developers go in, they add it to the code, they make sure it works. And so when they launch it, they know there's not going to be a problem. See, that's closed source in terms of you can't go in there monkey around with the code. But for me as a business owner, I can't have my site goes down because someone's plugin decided to get corrupted and affects my whole website. So for me, I pay the money for Kajabi because it's important that I always have a website that's working.
Yep. And that is a fair and valid reason to do something like that. I'm not one of these, they call them open source or proprietary bigots, depending on which side of the fence you're on, right? I'm not like that. You need to use the tool and the software that works best for you and fits best with your business model or your whatever model it is you're working on, you know, student, whatever. You need to figure out what is going to work best for you. And if what works best for you is a proprietary solution that just packages it all together and you can just get on there and use it, then that's the tool that you use. Like, you don't have to make it complicated.
Yeah, I'm getting into videos on YouTube now, and I'm learning how to do video production. A lot of people, they go out and they have a Mac, they go out and buy Final Cut Pro. And I'm like, why not use the free iMovie first and get somewhat familiar with how to edit videos instead of buying the granddaddy? Because you buy the big daddy, you're going to be overwhelmed because now you have to learn video editing and the software. I heard Final Cut Pro is not easy to learn. So use, like you said, use the minimum product you can use that's going to get you to where you want to get. Don't yep. immediately go into, oh, I'm going to buy the best of the best. I started with WordPress and I graduated into Kajabi.
Yep.
Don't go and overcommit yourself. And then all of a sudden you get frustrated because you can't figure it out. Get your feet wet, get familiar, and then grow as your business grows.
Exactly. It's all about baby steps, right? If we take it yep. back to that, it's all about use what you got. And this is a productivity tip that you're always talking about, right? Use the tools that you have so that you just start doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get bogged down in what's the right tool. What's the right, yep. like start where you are and start turning out. If you're trying to turn out YouTube content, start recording videos with what you have, start editing with what you can get your hands on, and just get the practice of doing it under your feet. Are those first bunch of videos going to suck? Probably. I've done it. I have a bunch of videos too that they're probably not the best videos. They're not the most polished videos, but that's where you learn. And then you learn and you grow and mm-hmm. you get better. And as you get better, right, you fine tune it and you realize that software doesn't work for me anymore. I need something more sophisticated. And it's a journey. You talk about that too, Mark, a lot. It's a journey. 100%. The whole, it's a journey.
Yep. Okay. So here we go with the pros and the cons of proprietary versus open source. So Danny, take it away.
All right. So the pros of proprietary software is that commercial proprietary software typically designed with a smaller scope of features and abilities. And they list this as a pro because, again, generally you won't get overwhelmed out of the box, right? It's a smaller feature set. It's easier for them to maintain it, and it's probably going to be easier for you to learn it. That's why they put it in the pro column. They can provide regular updates, technical support, and a wide range of tools to go with it because they've built it, right? And in a lot of cases, the support is better because you're talking directly to the developers that built it, and they a lot of times have a support staff that they're paying because it's proprietary and they're making money off of it. They have a support staff around it that has worked with the developers to learn how to triage issues with the software. There's often better maintenance and support provided directly by the software supplier. So those kind of go hand in hand.
Okay.
The cons of proprietary software is that it requires a license or subscription fee and sometimes maintenance costs, right? We talked about that earlier. The software can't be modified or customized to meet the needs of the user. Code can't be edited. So again, In this case, that's considered a con, because if you have a feature that you want and you have the ability to, from a developing standpoint, like if you were a developer and knew how to implement the feature, if it's proprietary, you can't. You still have to go back to the company to have them add the feature. Proprietary software can be discontinued at any point in time. They can decide to bail on a product whenever they want. Google's done this plenty of times in the past, for sure.
Yep.
And that affects business operations if the software supplier developer ceases management. So
Google Talk, anyone?
Yeah. So exactly. Google Talk, you know, Google Hangouts, like that was a whole thing. And they tried it.
Google Plus?
Yeah. I mean, Google. We're going to try this, get everybody on, and then be like, nah, we've decided we're not going to maintain that anymore. People build entire business models around being able to use that software. And then they're like, oh, nuts. What are we going to do? So that's kind of some of the quick pros and cons of the proprietary stuff. So on the open source side, the pros of open source is often more the features are more tailored. There's more compatibilities, and there's also generally greater overall functionality. I've seen this in a lot of different pieces of software. It's free to use, modify, and distribute. Users have full access to the source code at all times. Again, I mentioned some of the licensing criteria of some of it, but generally that's how it works. This is a big one. Open source communities constantly update these programs and remove bugs. So if you've got a piece of software like a WordPress where there's a lot of people that work on it, there's a lot of people that use it, you have a community of developers that are using the product that can also help find bugs, fix bugs, and keep that product maintained, working well, and moving forward. Now, again, that can also be a con, because if you've got a plugin that somebody just decides to bail on and it doesn't work anymore, you've got to kind of wait for somebody else to pick that up and fix it. So there's a give and take in there, and that might be in the con section. But some of the cons of open source is it's not as easy to use, because generally these developers are, they're usually single people or small teams. And they're not necessarily so focused on UI all the time. Now, that's gotten better over the years. I will tell you that a lot of the open source stuff I have is pretty easy to use. Some of it is very not easy to use. So it's like with anything else. I'm sure there's proprietary software out there that's easy to use and not easy. Final Cut Pro is an example of a very complex piece of software that a lot of people say is hard to use. It's proprietary. So. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one of those ones that can be case dependent.
Yeah. You don't get Final Cut Pro unless you're really committed to video. And I hear once you learn it, it's great, but the learning curve is really steep. So I'm still using iMovie.
Yeah. Well, Blender is an open source version of that, right? I've heard a lot of people say that Blender has a very stiff learning curve, but once you learn it, it's an amazing piece of software, and that's an open source one. So it's on both sides of the house, right?
Right.
Another con for the open source is the support and maintenance might not be readily available, as not one individual or organization owns the software. So if you think about it, it's an open source piece of software. You've either got one guy who's doing the development, so something's broken, and this guy might be a guy who's developed it. Like I've seen cases of this where he developed it for his own use. He put it out there on GitHub for people to use. People started using it. More people started using it. More people started using it. All of a sudden, this guy who literally wrote this on a weekend or over the course of a couple months, who actually has a real job and is married with kids, has to maintain this thing. And now his user base went from 1 to 100,000 because there's that many people using it. And he's getting all of these, and it's just him, right? So until a community around that can develop, and usually that develops organically, as opposite with proprietary, they can hire people. You know, a lot of times these guys are developing things for free. They're not making any money off of it, so they're not hiring people. It can get to the point where corporations start using it and will then start injecting money into these projects. Apache web server is actually open source. A lot of people don't know that because it's so big, but any of the Apache web server, Nginx web servers, those are all open source pieces of software, but their development is kind of funded by corporations because, well, Apache and Nginx web servers pretty much run the internet. So, like, if those break, it, like, breaks most of the internet. So, again, you got give and take on that stuff. And again, I kind of touched on this from the first one, but community support may not be suitable for some enterprise scenarios. So, if you're trying to use this in an enterprise and you've got one or two guys that are supporting it, that's probably not going to be good for your... You're not going to be able to pitch that to your boss. Got this great product. It works great, but there's only two guys that support it. So if things break, it might take 6 months to get an answer back.
CEOs don't want to hear that.
Right. So again, so those are some of the pros and cons to this. I put in here a list of some of the open source stuff that I use just to kind of give a flavor. There's a program called the GIMP, which actually stands for the GNU Image Manipulation Program. And I use that for, like, when I have to manipulate images. Like when I was helping Mark come up with the little podcast art for this show, mm-hmm. I used the GIMP to put that whole thing together.
Nice.
For media playback, especially videos, I use a piece of software called MPV. Probably nobody's heard of it. There's another program that some of you might have heard of called VLC, which is really good at playing back audio, video, plays back a variety of different media sources. Browsers are another big one, right? So like Chrome, Edge, those kind of browsers are all proprietary. I generally like to stick to the more open source browsers. So Firefox is a big open source browser. Brave, the one that I got Mark into using that we use a lot, is open source browser. So again, there's tons more. I mean, you can look it up. When I do live streams onto YouTube, I use a software called Open Broadcaster Studio. It always gets called OBS. Gets called OBS Studio. I don't know why they call it OBS Studio, because the S in OBS stands for studio. So really, you're calling it Open Broadcaster Studio. But anyway, I just go with it. So OBS is what I use for live streaming. That is probably like the number two or number three software for live streaming in the world. And it's open source. Like, that's like the predominant one that most people use. And then for any of my text editing or when I'm doing coding, I use a software called, it's actually called NeoVim, but it's a fork of a software called Vim. And most people aren't going to care about that by a hill of beans, but that's open source. There's a bunch of other different open source code editors out there. Text editors, you can get a whole bunch of different text editors. I believe Notepad++ for Windows, which is another big one that I've seen a lot of people use. I actually have it on my Windows box. I believe that's open source. So one thing I did want to mention, there is a site, and again, I will put this in our WhatsApp channel. So it behooves you to join our WhatsApp channel if you
behooves.
Do not.
Behooves.
I knew
that's
I dropped
an old
out
word.
A word. I know. So the WhatsApp channel is there for you, for us to communicate interesting things to you and for you to communicate with us. If you have questions or, you know, follow-up ideas, we're always looking for ideas. We're available to answer questions. If we come up with interesting things we want to put, we'll put it there. So the WhatsApp channel is the number two. Bald with his bald, just the word bald.
Bald then, with a D.
I know. I sort of messed that up because I was already thinking ahead to the last word, which is the word nerds with a Z instead of an S. So the number two, bald, and nerds with a Z on WhatsApp. Go there, sign up, we'll let you in. I'm going to post the link to this website in there, and it's called alternate2.net. That's the name of it. Alternative two, all one word, .net. I will post that in there. And they literally have, I don't know, like over 100,000 apps that they have that are basically, it gives you a box at the top where you can type in any application you want and it'll give you a bunch of alternatives. And it'll tell you what alternatives are open source. You can filter just by the open source alternatives. This site's been around for a very long time because I've been using them for a long time. Whenever I come up with some obscure proprietary software that I'm not sure of an open source alternative to, I usually go here and check it out and see what I can get. Nice. So it's pretty simple, but it works well. So
how did you enjoy being the majority speaker on the podcast today?
I liked it. I miss your wonderful radio voice because I'm slowly getting there after doing 13 episodes of this and trying to do some videos on my own and just kind of practicing into my microphone. I feel like I'm getting better. I'm nowhere near your caliber. Although, again, Mark, if you don't know, used to be a radio disc jockey for a local radio station up here in Rochester, New York.
Power Hits 98 PXY.
Yep. He's also a professional speaker. And as he said, 1,100 plus podcasts.
That's
already,
crazy. Do you realize
under your belt?
July 17th of 2022, it'll be 5 years I've been doing that show. That's insane. And it's all because Gary Vaynerchuk in the spring of 2017 said, the future is voice and audio, and everyone needs to have a podcast. And the rest, as they say, is history. And now I'm taking my podcast into a completely different realm because I found out that YouTube is the second most popular place to listen to podcasts. Why people want to watch Talking Heads on YouTube is beyond me, but I've been putting my podcast interviews on there and people are watching them. I wouldn't do that, but that's me. I'm not going to listen to my own podcast. So anyway, we need to come up with a topic. Great talk. You did a great job today. Very interesting. I didn't fall asleep. You made it interesting. I appreciate that. So for the next episode, this is the idea I want to pitch to you live on our show. I want to talk about predictions. I want to go out 5, 10, 15 years and give our own predictions. So we won't have any notes on this because I don't want to know what your predictions are. And I don't want you to know what my predictions are because we usually collaborate a note. But you up for that? We can do predictions.
Like that a lot. I really like that. That sounds like a really cool idea. That's a good one.
Thank you. So that'll be in the next episode. And because we're not going to collaborate the notes, listener, I have no idea what Danny's going to say. We won't cheat and talk about this via WhatsApp or anything like that. I really want to know what he thinks the future of technology is, because I've got some ideas. I will tell you, I will not be talking about the metaverse. I'm not going to call it metaverse. I'm not calling it Meta. It's Facebook. Okay. I mean, everything's Meta now. I went into my account the other day, and it's not the Facebook Business Center. It's the Meta Business Center. I said, oh, my gosh. Look, I'm not going to live in the metaverse, okay? I'm going to go out where there's real air. I have this vision. Do you remember Jabba the Hutt from Star Wars?
Yes.
We're all going to wear these VR headsets and be sitting on our we're going to be sitting on our couch. We're going to be the size of Jabba the Hutt, and we're going to have food just like all around us. And we're not even have to go up to go to the bathroom. We'll just have like hoses or something like a space shuttle or something like that. I mean, that's the way people are talking about. Hey, it doesn't matter if there's COVID. You can go anywhere. I'm like, would you rather walk the streets of Paris or would you rather look at it in VR? Oh, it's going to be feel like you're there. No, I'm sorry. Okay. You can't reach down and feel the water of the river and the Seine River. I'm sorry. You know, maybe because I'm 57 now, I officially crossed over the threshold of being 57. I mean, can you imagine living in a metaverse and never leaving your home again, just living your life through VR goggles?
No, I can't. I love technology, and the older I get, the less I want to deal with it. And it's not that I don't tinker with it to play with it and have fun with it, but the less I want to be attached to it all the time. I want to structure my time so I make time to play with my tech and I make time to live in this insane concept called the real world.
Now, let me ask you this. How old are you again?
I am 47. I'll be 48 in August.
Okay. So 47, can you, let's go back 10 years to 37. Could you imagine you would have an iPhone and an Apple Watch if they existed back then and an iPad 10 years ago? Do you think your 37-year-old self if he zoomed up to 2022, would have this technology, would you be shocked at yourself?
I might not be so shocked. I'd be shocked at the way the technology is.
Okay.
Like at 37, I'm pretty sure I had one of the first generation cell phones, so I thought it was cool.
Okay.
I just didn't think that it would be as sophisticated as it is.
No, I was going from the angle of tinkerer. Really surprised how much you've come over to the iPhone, the Apple Watch, and the iPad.
From that angle, I'm sorry, I missed the angle there. From that angle, no, I didn't think I'd have any of this stuff.
Wow.
But again, I think it was in conversations I had with you, trying the technology out and doing different things. And also, again, listening to some of the podcasts that I listened to in the tech world from the Linux side, when I started thinking about some of these things in terms of their use case, and some of these things can be thought of as appliances and not meant to be tinkered with because you're using them for a specific purpose or set of purposes. It changed the way I thought about my need for them. Like, I always really liked Apple stuff. It was just, it's always been really expensive, right? And there's a reason it's expensive. We've been down that road before. Yeah. But I never really thought I had a need for it or even a want for it. But when I saw what they could do, and I saw that there's really nothing in the tinkerer space that does what they do, and I realized that if I think of them as an appliance and they serve a job as an electronic tool, well, then it changed my perspective on things. Hmm. And now I realize that they are really good for what they're intended for. I was trying to, there's a word and it escapes me and I'm too young to have these kind of memory slips, but project. I was trying to project my tinkering on everything that was in my space. Like I was thinking everything that I had to have had to be that thing that I could tinker with. And when I realized, no, not everything has to be the thing of a tinkerer, mm-hmm. I realized I can actually get a lot of use out of these devices and not have to be able to tinker with them because I have my other devices that I tinker with.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. I did learn some stuff today. When I looked at the notes, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna be able to stay awake, but I didn't fall asleep. I didn't snore. So we're all good. So great episode, Danny. So again, next week, we're going to talk about predictions, where we think we're going in the future of technology. You can pick any date range. You can do a 5-year. I'm probably going to do 5-year, 10-year, 25 years, because I've got at least another 43 years on this planet. And I'm kind of excited and kind of scared because, our Aunt Rory is 84. My dad's 81. And, 25, 30 years ago, this technology didn't exist.
Yeah.
Now it's here. And some people are embracing it, like my father. And our Aunt Rory is like, I wish I could go back to the 1960s. I'm like, I don't. I like our technology. There would be no podcasting back then. If you didn't have a radio station, you couldn't do this kind of thing. So we'll talk about that next week. Danny, before we let them go, what do we have to always remind them without fail they have to do?
You always have to stay nerdy.